Summer is now officially 5 days old. That means the season of lounging with a good book in your favorite hammock, beach chair, or on the front porch rocker is fully upon us. And our book reviewer, Alan Chuse, has lots of great summer reading to recommend.
This summer, there's a novel I want to recommend whose author died almost 60 years ago. That's Theodore Dreiser, whose 900-page masterwork, An American Tragedy, has just been reissued in a brand new Library of America edition. Dreiser's novel caused a lot of controversy in its day, and then again this spring when it was reprinted in this beautiful new edition. Not because of the great story. Everyone agrees about the story. The tale of down-and-out Midwesterner Clyde Griffiths, whose attempt to rise up through the social ranks leads him to plan a vicious murder. It's the style, or lack of it, that's made some critics cry uncle. Big, old, lumbering sentences, paragraphs that stumble around the page, these can make for a messy 900 pages. But as Robert Penwarren argued long ago, you shouldn't read Dreiser by the line or by the page, but by the scene. Scene by scene, he's a great storyteller, like Dickens before him, and like, God help us, Stephen King in our own day. On the page, Ernest Hemingway's voice is one of the most distinctive in American fiction. There's a 3-CD set of the short stories of Ernest Hemingway just out, and if we can't have Hemingway reading them, we do have the authoritative voice of actor Stacy Keach reading the short stories that changed American literature.
Nick looked down into the pool from the bridge. It was a hot day. A kingfisher flew up the stream. It was a long time since Nick had looked into a stream and seen trout. They were very satisfactory. As the shadow of the kingfisher moved up the stream, a big trout shot upstream at a long angle, only his shadow marking the angle, then lost his shadow as he came through the surface of the water, caught the sun, and then, as he went back into the stream under the surface, shadows seemed to float down the stream with the current, unresisting to his post under the bridge, where he tightened, facing up into the current. Nick's heart tightened as the trout moved. He felt all the old feeling.
I love the old feeling, but you can't really live on classics alone. So along with the masterworks, I like to jazz up my summer reading with different stories, thrillers, and genre books of all sorts. Books great in their own fashion. Walter Mosley, born and bred in Los Angeles, seems to have genre fiction in his blood. He's written one period crime thriller after another. L.A. in the decades after World War II has become his turf. And with his new novel, Fear Itself, he returns to that setting. Imagine this, a novel with a fairly complicated plot about murder and the quest for a valuable old book that's easier to read than watching a movie, and it still gives you the substance of a whole way of life, that is, black life, in L.A. during the 50s.
Both white men wore dark suits and frowns. One was going bald and the other had hair nearly down to his eyebrows. Paris Menton? Yes, officer. Why you think we're cops? The hairy one asked. Guilty conscience? His partner chimed. How can I help you? I replied. We're looking for a friend of yours, Baldy said. A man named Fearless Jones. He ain't here. Do you know where we might find him? No, sir. My face went blank. The life drained out of my voice. My arms hung down at my side, and I was willing to do anything those policemen wanted, except tell the truth. When's the last time you saw him? The ape man asked. I stared at the sky between their faces, pretending to concentrate. Maybe 4 weeks. He's been up north working for a man grows watermelons.
Another L.A. writer, Lisa C., was born in Paris but grew up in California. She's the daughter of novelist Carolyn C., and she's got a Chinese great-grandfather on her mother's side of the family, which led her to do intensive research about her family history and Chinese history. Her new thriller, Dragon Bones, takes us to the upper reaches of the Yangtze River, where a small group of international scientists are trying to excavate what finds they can before the waters start rising behind that huge new dam we've been hearing about. And there's murder and all sorts of chicanery going on, from theft of artifacts to the bloody rituals of a Chinese religious cult. Along with the thrills of reading about the crimes, you get a short course in Chinese history and a lovely portrait of the Chinese crime sleuth, the Red Princess, Lu Hulan.
Hulan was easy to spot amid the other Beijingers here this morning. It wasn't that she dressed in a colorful way, for these days Beijing's residents embraced the most vibrant colors they could find. It wasn't that she wore designer clothes, although she certainly could afford to shop at any of the foreign designer boutiques now in the city. Rather, she dressed in the most exquisite clothes of the finest silks, all of which had once belonged to her mother, her grandmother, or her other colorful ancestors.
The heroine of William Gibson's new novel, Pattern Recognition, is a bit of a sleuth herself. She flies around the world in search of the newest, hippest trends. Gibson is the writer whom everyone points to as the inventor of the hip science fiction mode of cyberpunk. His new book ought to be on Pollard's list. It's one of the coolest appraisals of contemporary consumer culture we've had.
Google Case and you will find Cool Hunter. And if you look closely, you may see it suggested that she is a sensitive of some kind, a dowser in the world of global marketing. Though the truth is closer to allergy, a morbid and sometimes violent reactivity to the semiotics of the marketplace. She rolls over, abandoning this pointless parody of sleep, gropes for her clothes, a small boy's black Fruit of the Loom t-shirt, thoroughly shrunken, a thin gray v-necked pullover purchased by the half dozen from a supplier to New England prep schools, and a new and oversized pair of black 501s, every trademark carefully removed. Even the buttons on these have been ground flat, featureless, by a puzzled Korean locksmith in the village a week ago.
Whether the experiment of the McSweeney's mammoth treasury of thrilling tales has been a success, I leave to the reader to judge.
There's future and past in the anthology that novelist Michael Chabon has edited called McSweeney's Mammoth Treasure of Thrilling Tales, a book put together for the sake of pure storytelling with contributions by Elmore Leonard, my favorite fantasy writer Miss Kelly Link of Brooklyn, New York, California writer Karen Joy Fowler, Michael Crichton, and Chabon himself with a story and an introduction.
While they were working on their stories, a number of the writers found within these covers reported to me, via giddy emails, that they had forgotten how much fun writing a short story could be. I think that we have forgotten how much fun reading a short story can be, and I hope that, if nothing else, this treasury goes some small distance toward reminding us of that lost but fundamental truth.
You'll have a lot of serious reading fun with the work of Miley Malloy, who brought out her first collection last year. It was called Half in Love, and she's been winning awards for it ever since. Malloy is what other writers call the real thing. Half in Love has just come out in paperback, and I heartily recommend it to you. Listen to this opening line from her story, Ranch Girl, and see if you don't catch something of what's caught me about her work.
If you're white, and you're not rich or poor, but somewhere in the middle, it's hard to have worse luck than to be born a girl on a ranch. It doesn't matter if your dad's the foreman or the rancher. You're still a ranch girl, and you've been dealt a bad hand. If you're the foreman's daughter on Ted Haskell's Running H Cattle Ranch, you live in the foreman's house, on the dirt road between Haskell's place and the barn. There are two bedrooms with walls made of particle board, one bathroom, no tub, muddy boots and jackets in the living room, and a kitchen that's never used. No one from school ever visits the ranch, so you can keep your room the way you decorated it at 10. A pink comforter, horse posters on the walls, plastic horse models on the shelves. Outside there's an old cow dog with a ruined hip, a barn cat who sleeps in the rafters, and, until he dies, a runt calf named Minute, who cries at night by the front door.
If you want to take a step back into American history this summer, I'd recommend a compact little work of nonfiction, historian James N. McPherson's Hallowed Ground, A Walk at Gettysburg. It's a short book. You can read it in a day. It begins on the first day of the battle, nearly 140 years ago, in 1863.
Here, on the morning of July 1st, were posted the outlying pickets of the 8th Illinois Cavalry. As the sun burned away the mist, they spotted a column of Confederate infantry marching toward them. At 7:30 a.m., Lieutenant Marcellus Jones rested a breech-loading Sharps carbine on a fence rail and fired at the enemy. It was the first shot in the largest battle ever fought in the Western Hemisphere. Why were these soldiers here, more than 100 miles north of the Rappahannock River in Virginia, where they had confronted each other until only 3 weeks earlier? What brought these two armies to Gettysburg?
I go to the basement and open my ruck. The basement is in Iowa, after a long, harsh winter, and deep in the ruck where I reach for my camis, I still feel the cold of February.
A story from another war, Anthony Swafford, reading from his powerful memoir, Jarhead, a Marine's Chronicle of the Gulf War and Other Battles. It's a raucous, often obscene and iconoclastic first-person story of the education of a young American Marine that cuts to the bone and then staunches the wound with just the right prose.
I pull out maps of Kuwait and Saudi Arabia, patrol books, pictures, letters, my journal with its sparse entries, coalition propaganda pamphlets, brass bore punch for the M40A1 sniper rifle, a handful of 50 caliber projectiles. I'm after something. Memory, yes, more than just time. Years pass, but more than just time. I've been working toward this. I've opened the ruck, and now I must open myself.
One more amazing writer out of the last century with the kind of novel made for summer. Halldór Laxness, the Icelandic novelist who won the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1955 and died 5 years ago at the age of 96. Paradise Reclaimed is the story of an Icelandic farmer intrigued with the Mormon religion who travels to Salt Lake City on a religious quest, leaving his family behind to nothing but trouble. This is an absolutely delightful quest novel with a light touch but deep sympathy for the best and worst of human motives by one of the most distinctive stylists you'll ever read. Laxness is wise, sly, funny, generous, forgiving of his worst character's worst faults. The way he writes about summer in Iceland, among other things, is just lovely. Allow me to read a little from it. From the sea, beyond the sands and marshes, for 1,000 years the murmur was always the same. On still summer days, the sound of a scythe being hammered sharp would drift over from the neighboring farm. There was rain on the way if the cows lay down in the meadow, particularly if they were all lying on the same side. But if there were a dry spell on the way, they would bellow 11 times in a row at sunset. Always the same story. Always the same stories we tell, stories past, stories present, stories future. And we read them over and over again.
Our reviewer is Alan Chews. He teaches writing at George Mason University in Fairfax, Virginia. And here again are his summer reading recommendations. An American Tragedy by Theodore Dreiser, the short stories of Ernest Hemingway, read by Stacy Keach, Fear Itself by Walter Mosley, Dragon Bones by Lisa C., Pattern Recognition by William Gibson, an anthology of stories called McSweeney's Mammoth Treasure of Thrilling Tales, edited by Michael Chabon, Half in Love by Miley Malloy, Hallowed Ground, A Walk in Gettysburg by historian James M. McPherson, Jarhead, A Marine's Chronicle of the Gulf War and Other Battles by Anthony Swofford, and finally, Paradise Reclaimed by Halldór Laxness. And if you missed all that, check our website at npr.org for the full list.